Live, on air, online, and on the Highland Radio app. This is Highland Radio News.
Good evening, it's Donna Marie Doherty with the news at 5 o'clock. First, a look at today's main headlines. Injury was escaped after a house caught fire in Manor Cunningham last night. A man accused of raping and murdering a woman in Derry last August has been returned to court. The amended remediation of dwellings affected by defective concretes bill has been passed in the Dáil after a marathon debate last night, and the HSE is asking anyone with flu-like symptoms not to visit Letterkenny University Hospital. These stories in full, plus more to follow. Mark Gallagher will have all the latest in sport at 5:15. Injury was escaped last night after a house caught fire in Manor Cunningham overnight. Gardaí and emergency services attended the scene at around 4:30 in the morning. The blaze was brought under control and residents were safely evacuated. It's understood that no foul play is suspected to be the cause of the fire at this time. The man accused of raping and murdering a woman in Derry on August 24th last year has been returned to court. The victim, 65-year-old Montserrat Elias, was found in a house on Harvey Street following reports of a fire. Police said she suffered a horrific attack and sustained multiple injuries. Kieran Murray, age 30, of Malvern Terrace in Derry, was charged with murder, rape and arson endangering life when he appeared at a preliminary inquiry at the local magistrate's court today. It was accepted that there was a case to answer and no contrary submissions were made. Murray chose not to call any witnesses or submit any statements. He was returned for trial to Derry Crown Court on January 8, 2026 and was remanded in continuing custody. The amendment remediation of dwellings affected by defective concrete blocks bill has been passed in the Dáil after a marathon debate last night. It began at 7:15 in the evening and concluded around 35 minutes after midnight. Donal Kavanagh has the special report.
Opening the debate in the Dáil last night, Housing Minister James Brown said this latest bill is intended to ease the pressure on affected homeowners and strengthen regulation.
I've outlined in detail the proposed amendments to the Building Control Act, and it is clear that these proposed changes will bring about an improved regulatory environment for the benefit of all stakeholders. I ask for the support of the members of the House.
Almost 6 hours later, after dozens of opposition amendments were voted on and lost, Ciarán Comhairle Bhronagh Murphy confirmed that the bill had been passed.
The Remediation of Dwellings Damaged by the Use of Defective Concrete Blocks Amendment Bill 2025 Committee in Remaining Stages. Thorough result, deputies Thaw 72, deputies Neil 64. The question is carried. The bill will now be sent to the Seanad.
At one point during last night's debate, Deputy Patrick McLaughlin compared the initial rush to label the cause of crumbling blocks in Donegal as mica to the diagnosis of the wrong cancer. Meanwhile, 100% Redress Deputy Charles Ward called for the publication of trends and data relating to defective concrete, saying that identifying patterns at an early stage would allow for earlier responses.
Publishing regional patterns with international comparisons helps prevent repeated mistakes into the future and allows for very important early interventions, and it builds trust that the government and the scheme are operating together, and where we have pockets of pyrite and pyrrhotite and other deleterious materials, that we can see it coming and we can react to it.
A number of the amendments were geared toward providing what their proposers said would be genuine 100% redress. Deputy Piers Doherty said the amount by which many people are falling short is huge. He told TDs many people can't even think of getting on the bottom rung of the ladder because they haven't got the money to start. He recounted some of the conversations he's been having with people who are affected.
I spoke to one individual, an absolute nightmare that they went through for a number of years. And I asked them, I says, honestly, what do you think it's going to be in terms of your own pocket? He says, Piers, I don't even want to think about it, but it's probably in the range of 80 to 100,000. That's money that they don't have. I spoke to a fella here last night who isn't even at the stage of tenders and all of that. They're accepted for demolition and they can't even think about, they're not even thinking about where the money would come from.
Well, during the debate, Donegal TD Pádraig Ó Gallagher said he could vote against his party, Fianna Fáil, but he believes he can serve the people of Donegal better by working with the government to secure more improvements. Deputy Gallagher acknowledged that, in his view, the scheme is still not working and falls far short of the commitment to deliver 100% redress. In 2022, former Deputy and Minister Joe McHugh lost the Fine Gael whip after voting against the previous bill. Well, Deputy Gallagher made it clear last night he would not be following suit.
I was always loyal to my party, and I believe that I can serve the people of Donegal better than being a hero tonight and voting against my party. I can serve them better by continuing to work with the Minister, who I believe is genuine in trying to resolve this problem, than by being a hero, as one did here many years ago and then evaporated. So I feel strongly about this, and I have been making this case to the Minister. I want to make it publicly tonight, and I will continue to make that case. And I've never said, and I know it is no reflection on me, that it's working. It's not working.
The HSE is asking anyone with flu-like symptoms not to visit Letterkenny University Hospital. Today, 18 patients are with flu being treated in the hospital, with a particularly high number of older people and children attending the emergency department with symptoms. Since the start of this flu season, 304 people in Donegal have been confirmed with flu through laboratory testing, including 101 last week. 153 people have been hospitalised in the county so far this season, including 53 last week. With more details, here's Ryan Brawley.
Symptoms of flu include a high temperature, aches and pains, headache, sore throat or a cough. Those experiencing these symptoms should not visit loved ones in hospital until at least 48 hours after symptoms have cleared. A maximum of 2 visitors per patient will be strictly enforced unless a pre-approved exception is granted on compassionate grounds. No children should visit the hospital, except in the maternity ward, where children may only visit with prior approval from the ward under compassionate grounds. Strict hand hygiene measures will be in place, and visitors are encouraged to use face masks. The hospital says it regrets having to enforce these rules during the festive season, but safety must be prioritised. The guidelines in full can be found on our website, highlandradio.com.
Independent Ireland leader Michael Collins raised the case of a Killybegs fish exporter who was investigated by the SFPA in the Dáil. The case collapsed for insufficient evidence, and Deputy Collins is now urging the government to review all pending catch weight prosecutions. He says the SFPA's approach in the Donegal case raised serious questions.
Minister of the Irish Sea Fisheries Protection Authority, the SFPA prosecuted Sean Ward Fish Exports Limited, a Killybegs seafood company, for allegedly tampering with weighing scales in 2015. The case collapsed after 10 years in late 2025, with the judge citing a complete lack of evidence, leading a huge industry backlash against the SFPA for what many call harassment, wasted resources and damaged reputation, and a call for major reform. Minister, in light of this judgment, in the SFPA versus Sean Ward case, will this government ask the DPP to review all current weighing pending prosecutions against fishermen from Castletown Bear to Killybegs?
As Deputy Collins knows, there's a separation of powers in the state with regard to the role of the executive, the Oireachtas, the DPP and An Garda Síochána. But the more substantive issue that you raised, I'll ask the Minister for the Marine to revert to you.
Irish sheep farmers have lost out on more than €2 million in funding after the National Exchequer Sheep Scheme was oversubscribed. Farmers had initially been due to receive €13 per ewe for taking part in the scheme, but that payment was cut by €150 to stretch the budget after a higher than expected numbers signed up. Donegal has the highest level of sheep farming in the country, with the latest sheep and goat census showing a 3-to-1 sheep to person ratio in the county. IFA Sheep Chair Adrian Gallagher says farmers have effectively lost money as a result, and warns that production in the sector has fallen by 20%.
If the scheme was undersubscribed, then would the minister increase the €13 to pay the full payment? The answer is no. We have managed the scheme in years gone by where there was schemes allocated to sheep farmers that were severely undersubscribed due to the criteria that the minister put in for farmers to draw down the schemes. So in this case, on this occasion, it's the reverse. To impose a linear cut on a sector that is in decline, it just sends out the wrong signals to any farmer that may consider going into sheep farming when they realise that this can happen. And here's just another example of the government not taking the sheep sector as seriously, because we have a decline of 800,000 lamb's throughput going through the factories in the last since the last 2 years. Like, you know, so I mean, 800,000 and a sheep killer, an annual sheep killer, 3,000. I mean, we're looking at a 20% drop.
Works are underway to restore native oak and birch trees to Glenveagh National Park. Recent tree felling along the R251 is part of phase two of a multi-stage plan to replace non-native conifers under the 100-year NPWS woodland strategy. Dr. Emmett Johnston, regional manager of Glenveagh National Park, says this year alone over 20,000 seeds have been propagated.
The trees that were planted in the park around the visitor centre in the late 70s and early 80s are trees from North America, and they're actually invasive, so they start to spread throughout the natural and wild habitats across the park. So we need to remove them to protect our natural habitats, so the Irish habitats. And really we're trying to enhance and develop the ancient oak woodlands and birch woodlands that we have here in Glenveagh, and removing the conifer trees is a part of that process. Glenveagh itself is Glenvaha, Glen of the Birches, so we would like to see a lot more birch trees here. And part of that process is really just eradicating plants that have been introduced over the last 100 years or so.
And now there has been a lot of work done. Staff there have propagated over 20,000 oak acorns.
That's right. This year has been really successful. It was what we call a mast year for collecting oak seeds or oak acorns. And we've put in or set over 20,000 acorns this year, and in 2 years' time those trees are going to be brought on now in our nursery, and in 2 years' time they'll be planted out. And the nursery is also propagating other trees such as yew and birch and aspen, and we're really looking forward to seeing the changes that it will be evident in the landscape in Glenveagh over the next 5 to 10 years.
It's 12 minutes past five here in Highland Radio. Mark Gallagher will be back with all the latest in sport. It's 5:15 on Highland Radio. Mark Gallagher's at the sports desk.
Thanks, Donnabry. Good evening. We'll start with Gaelic Games. Donegal GAA held their annual county convention yesterday evening in Ballybofey. There were a number of changes to the executive, with Sharon McGinty voted in as assistant and fixture secretary. Michelle McKenna is the new assistant treasurer. Frankie Doherty joins Andy Doherty as the county's Ulster delegates. And Conor O'Gallagher is the Irish and cultural officer. Just one motion was passed, an amendment to bylaw 4.8, where a person seeking to become a member of the association shall be restricted to joining a club in the catchment area of their permanent residence, or a club with which they have an other relevant connection, be it a sibling is already registered with that club, or a parent was previously in permanent residence in the catchment area, or previously a member of that club. Chairperson Mary Coughlin feels there will be participation benefits with the change after the motion was passed last night.
At the end of the day, what are we supposed to do? We have to make opportunities available to our young people to participate and to play. We have the demographics. It's very obvious that there is a declining population in certain areas and an increase in population in others. So you'll have two issues in this country. One, where you have large urban areas where there's not enough clubs and where children are not given an opportunity to participate, and then you have smaller clubs where they mightn't be able to participate at a certain age group. And if we can bring some flexibility for some of the rules and regulations and bylaws to allow those children maybe to come together at one stage of their lives and go back to their club, I think that would be hugely important. And reducing maybe the numbers from 13 to 11, for example.
You can find more on that convention over on our website at highlandradio.com. In soccer, Shelburne manager Joey O'Brien wants his side to relish the opportunity in their Europa Conference League clash with Crystal Palace tonight. Shells have yet to win a game in the league phase and are still awaiting their first goal, while Palace are in good form and currently sit fourth in the English Premier League. O'Brien says they'll have to be at their best to get a positive result.
So lucky to be in this position, I suppose, as professional footballers and being involved in games and then getting an opportunity to be in a game like this. It's really, really good. But here, just from our point of view, it's just about focusing on ourselves, really, you know what I mean? I think, as I said, from the Alkmaar game, there's definitely areas to improve on.
Kickoff is at 8 o'clock in Tala, and Shamrock Rovers are in Iceland to take on Breda Blick from 5:45. Nottingham Forest boss Sean Dyche says he needs his entire squad to keep stepping up as they look to overcome the frantic schedule ahead of them. They head to Dutch side Utrecht in the Europa League later. That game gets underway at 5:45, as does Rangers' trip to Hungary to face Ferencvaros. At 8, Celtic welcome Roma to Parkhead, and Aston Villa are away to Basel. Mark Connolly has teamed up with his former manager Rory Higgins at Coleraine. Higgins brought the Clonas native to Derry City, and now Connolly departs the Brandywell for the Irish League Premiership joint leaders. Connolly told Cool FM Coleraine is the right fit at this point in his career.
Kids are in school there, which helps, but there's a lot more factors to it. I had offers. I had offer League of Ireland. I had offer the other side of the world, and spoke to a lot of clubs, and you have to sit down and speak to your family and think what's best this stage of my career, but also coming to something that you feel like is right.
FIFA are being accused of betrayal after announcing ticket prices for next year's World Cup, which start at more than €3,500. Fan group Football Supporters Europe say it's astonished by the extortionate cost of attending games in the USA, Canada and Mexico. In comparison, the lowest priced tickets for the Trophy Decider in Qatar in 2022 were £450. Moving on to darts, the PDC World Darts Championship gets underway tonight at the Alexander Palace as 18-year-old Luke Littler looks to defend his crown. A record 128 players enter the tournament at the Ali Pali this year, competing for the £1 million prize. PDC Chief Executive Matt Porter says it's once again the ticket everyone wants at this time of the year.
It's the event that everybody wants to come to. It's an event everybody wants to take a selfie at. It's the event everybody wants their Christmas party at. You know, it's where people want to be at Christmas. And that's great for us. But it's important that that carries on throughout the year. Increased exposure that we're getting in the media. They keep that narrative of darts going over 12 months.
Defending champion Luke Littler gets his campaign underway as he opens against Darius Lebanowskis in a best of five first round clash, and former world champion Michael Smith meets Lisa Ashton. Finally, in rugby, Reiko Ione will start for Leinster for the first time tomorrow when they travel to Leicester Tigers in the Investec Champions Cup. The All Blacks centre will join Robbie Henshaw in midfield for that game at Welford Road. There are seven changes in all from the side that beat Harlequins last weekend. James Lowe is named on the wing, while Harry Byrne is preferred to Sam Prendergast at out half. The ladder is on the bench. That's all your sport for today. We're back with more during the 8 o'clock news tomorrow morning. Back to you, Donna Marie.
Thanks, Mark. Looking now to the weather forecast, mostly cloudy and dry this evening in an all light to moderate southerly winds. It will stay mostly dry and clear overnight with some isolated showers and lows of 1 to 4 degrees in light to moderate southerly winds. To conclude this evening's news, a look back at today's main stories. Injury was escaped after a house caught fire in Manor Cunningham overnight. Gardaí and emergency services attended the scene at around 4:30 a.m. The blaze was brought under control and the residents were safely evacuated. The man accused of raping and murdering a woman in Derry on August 24th last year has been returned to court. The victim, 65-year-old Montserrat Elias, was found in a house on Harvey Street following reports of a fire. Police said she suffered a horrific attack and sustained multiple injuries. Kieran Murray, aged 30, of Malvern Terrace in Derry, was charged with murder, rape and arson, endangering life when he appeared at a preliminary inquiry at the local magistrate's court today. And finally, the HSE is asking anyone with flu-like symptoms not to visit Letterkenny University Hospital. Today, 18 patients with flu are being treated in the hospital, with a particularly high number of older people and children attending the ED with symptoms. Since the start of the flu season, 304 people in Donegal have been confirmed with flu through laboratory testing, including 101 last week. That's all for now. Back with headlines at 6 o'clock.
The obituary notices for this Thursday evening, December 11th. The death has taken place of Anne Marie McLaughlin, 123 St Finian's Park, Melville. Anne Marie's remains will leave Amy McLaughlin Funeral Home this evening at 8 p.m. going to her home. The removal is open to the public, however, the family home is private this evening. Funeral from there on Sunday at 12:30 p.m. for 1 p.m. Requiem Mass in St Pius X Church, Melville, followed by private cremation in Lakeland's Crematorium, Cavan. Requiem Mass can be viewed live on movilleparish.com.
family time from 10 p.m. to 11 a.m. and on the morning of the funeral. Family flowers only, please. Donations in lieu, if desired, to the Irish Heart Foundation, care of any family member, or Eamon McLaughlin Funeral Director. The death has occurred of Rebecca Ray Bradley, née Moran, 612 Altaderry, Calais. Rebecca's remains are reposing at her home. Funeral on Saturday morning, leaving at 10:30 a.m, going to Church of the Immaculate Conception, Calais, for Requiem Mass at 11 a.m, followed by interment in All Saints Graveyard, Newton Cunningham. Requiem Mass can be viewed on churchservices.tv. Family time, please, from 9 p.m. on Friday night and on the morning of the funeral. The death has taken place of Jane McGarvey, née McDade, Ballyheeran, Kilmacrenan. Jane's remains will repose at her daughter Maureen Rodden's residence, Meadowview, Kilconnell, Kilmacrenan, today from 6 p.m. until 10 p.m. and tomorrow from 12 noon until 10 p.m. Rosary both nights at 9 p.m. Funeral from there on Saturday morning, going to St. Columbus Church, Kilmacrenan, for Requiem Mass at 11 a.m, followed by burial in the family plot in the adjoining cemetery. Family time on the morning of the funeral, please. Funeral Mass can be viewed on churchservices.tv. Family flowers only, please. Donations in lieu of flowers to the IMND Association or to the Donegal branch of the MS Society of Ireland, care of Charlie McLafferty, Funeral Director, or any family member. The death has occurred of John Barron, Drumdoit, Castlefin. Reposing at Lynch's Funeral Home, 50 Castlefin Road, Castlederg, today and tomorrow from 6:30 until 8:30 p.m. Funeral from the funeral home via Drumdoit on Saturday morning at 11:10 a.m. for Requiem Mass at 12 noon in St. Columbus Church, Dunnyloop. Interment afterwards in the adjoining churchyard. The funeral home is private on the morning of the funeral. The death has occurred of John Jack Stockton, Carrow Mina, Donegal, and formerly of Padiham, Lancashire, England. Jack will repose at J.P. Warden's Son's Funeral Home, Sandyford Village, Dublin, this evening until 6 p.m. Jack's remains will arrive at the Muff border at approximately 4:30 p.m. tomorrow to repose at the family home in Carrow Mina from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. House private, please, at all other times. Funeral cortege will depart the family home at 10:30 on Saturday morning for 11 a.m. Requiem Mass in St. Columbus Church, Ballinacray, followed by interment in the adjoining graveyard. Requiem Mass can be viewed live on Eamon McLaughlin Funeral Director's Facebook page. The death has occurred of Paddy Doherty, Sean, Bochan, Culdaff. Paddy's remains are at the home of his brother Sean at Bochan, Culdaff. Funeral from there on Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. for 1:30 p.m. Requiem Mass in St. Mary's Church, Bochan, followed by interment in the adjoining cemetery. Requiem Mass can be viewed live on culdaffparish.com. Family time from 9 p.m. to 11 a.m. Family flowers only, please. Donations in lieu, if desired, to the Patients' Comfort Fund, Carndonagh Community Hospital, care of any family member or Eamon McLaughlin Funeral Director. The death has occurred in Eltham, London, of Padraig Gallagher, formerly of Ardlahan, Clann. Padraig's remains are reposing at the home of his sister Annie Kelly in Ardlahan, Clann. Requiem Mass tomorrow at 12 noon in the Church of Our Lady of Perpetual Help, Glenfinn, with burial afterwards in the family plot in Kiltavogue Cemetery. The Mass can be viewed on the parish webcam. Family time on the morning of the funeral, please. For family information and more details regarding wakes and funerals, please go to highlandradio.com.
Are you a farmer looking to grow your business? Get up to €75,000 with Cultivate, our competitive, unsecured agricultural loan. Visit us today at Inishowen, Ballybuffet and Stranorler, or Lifford Credit Union. Sponsors of today's farming show. Credit unions of Ireland are regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Farming News and Views here on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore.
Well, back in October, Donegal farmer Seanie Boyle was named one of 12 new Farming for Nature ambassadors. The award celebrates farmers across the country who are leading the way in nature-friendly farming. He has been a pioneer of many innovative agri-environmental practices. Next Tuesday, December the 16th, he'll be participating in an online question and answer session so people can find out more. I've been speaking to him about some of the practices that he's been carrying out, and I began by asking him to tell me more about his farm based near Falkara.
Yeah, well, it's a typical type farm here in northwest Donegal. Fairly fragmented. You have your lowland, and then in my case I have a fair amount of commonage tied in with that as well, which is going to the top of Muckish Mountain. Also there would be land down along the sea below Falkara along the coastline, and it's classified as special protection area for the Corn Creek, and then there's a couple of plots as well out on Torrey Island as well, again special protection area for the Corn Creek.
You've been doing a lot of things that would be connected with conservation grazing. So just tell us, what exactly does that mean?
Well, that kind of really started through the Corn Creek Life Project, and that was land, I suppose you could partly say, was maybe kind of abandoned, or land that got into rank vegetation. And the way to tackle it, I suppose, was either mechanically with tractor and mulcher or mower and that, or using livestock. So in the case of the Corn Creek Life Project, the decision was made that we would go down the road of introducing the Galloways out to Torrey that time a couple of years ago, just to get in there and get eaten away that rank vegetation and getting the whole structure opened up for all the different kind of flora and fauna to start coming back again on that land. Because as you'd kind of be understand, when grass grows and then it dies back and then another layer comes, it's like a complete carpet effect ends up there, and there's not much life happening there, whereas the cattle kind of just went in there and done their job from a grazing point of view, and then with them dunging right around the whole plot as well, that then got a whole ecosystem going there as regards flies and different kind of wee vertebrates and everything to help the whole structure of the land. So that was done out on the island, and it was done here along the coast as well on plots of land on the SPA. Now there's people would be doing the same type of thing on other sorts of systems around the coastline, maybe that Life on Macker project that's there, exact same thing. They would have cattle grazing particular areas to graze down that vegetation. So it's kind of, it's called conservation grazing. It's happening in different places now because they feel that it's the way to go, and it's a good benefit to the overall kind of ecosystem there for biodiversity.
So previously, you know, there was a feeling that much of this land, as you say, poor enough land, and maybe the outlook for farming wasn't overly good. But now there's been a change of mindset. There are opportunities there as well. And you've also been instrumental in securing funding for an upcoming European Innovation Partnership project. What does that involve?
Yeah, that would be through the Wild Atlantic Nature Project was going in Donegal here. But again, something that maybe I know I've been involved in a couple other EIPs that have been going on in the county prior to that, but there was... Because I'm up there on the commonages with my own sheep and just seeing the difficulties that it is to manage that landscape, and I suppose ageing population and trying to get young people to go up there, just I kind of was interested in trying to see could there be something done in the line of getting funding to look at that whole area of commonages. It's something that maybe has been neglected over the years. And it's kind of left to a kind of select few now to be actually managing that. But that, is there any way that we could get that maybe going again and getting people involved on that kind of landscape as well? So that's the Farm Up EIP. It's just really only taking off. It's only starting. So the hope is to look at that area from a grazing point of view, from a peatland restoration point of view, from a water quality point of view, and try and put actions or measures in place to improve that whole habitat that's up there.
The corncrake population on Torrey, that's risen quite significantly.
partly due to some of the schemes that you've been involved in there. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, say even the numbers there last year would have went up to something like 45 pairs there on Torrey. They would normally come in at around maybe 20, 22 kind of on a regular season. Look, there's a huge big array of stuff involved there. Like, you could maybe come down to even climate, maybe even would have a factor there last year, you know, in a good spring and stuff like that there. But then there's crops that would have been put in to help that side of things. So going back to the land again and just trying to work with that there to make it as accessible as possible for the Corn Creeks when they do come, to give them a fighting chance, as they say. There was predator control as well done, you know, on both the mainland and on the islands, because that has a big bearing on numbers and how the wee chicks, whether they actually get to adult level or not. There's a lot was going on in that project. Now, that project has actually finished. The 5 years is up, and the hope is that there'll be funding now will come through NPWS to keep that particular scheme kind of going and ticking over, because it the problem we have with a lot of the schemes is they're over a short period. There's a 5 year cycle, and then some of them just fall completely and there's no more funding. And I think that's maybe something that needs to be looked at, that it needs to be a longer term plan.
Now, you're involved with Farming for Nature. There's this webinar taking place next Tuesday. So tell us what it's about. I suppose it's to encourage people to find out more of what they can actually do on land similar to your own.
Aye, well, as I said, it's the type of farm that's here is going to... It's marginal land. Like, yes, there's green land there. You know, that would be improved land over the years from the time I started farming away back in the 90s and going into certain schemes and whatnot at the time. And the whole way through, we've been in different environmental schemes. So we've been kind of doing bits and pieces along the way, and then extra bits, I suppose. I went myself and kind of done extra bit of planting and bit of hedgerows and put in a pond and stuff like that there over the years. So that's, I suppose, which led to the Farming for Nature. And then because I was involved with the Corn Creek Life Project and what I was doing on my own land and the land out in Torrey to do with that as well. So it's been a bit of a journey, I suppose, over the years. I was brought up with livestock. That's what we all knew about. But this is important too in the bigger scale as well. So on Tuesday night, I suppose the session would be that I'd be explaining what exactly I'm at, the journey maybe that I've been on, and then that people that kind of maybe feel that they maybe have the same type of landscape as my own, or things maybe they could do and implement on their own farms. Because I think myself, what we need to do maybe as farmers is just look at our own farm gate level and see where we could do stuff to improve everything, whether it be from a livestock point of view, whether it be from water point of view or nature, everything like that. Take a look at it, and every farmer do their own bit on their own farm, and you wouldn't be long, you know, getting a big network there going. A lot of the time schemes come in and put a focus or an emphasis on a particular thing, and maybe I would be saying that we look at the bigger picture of a whole pile of stuff maybe that could happen on farms. So there are areas of the farm that maybe we're not farming that much with livestock, but we could add value other ways, and them areas with maybe a native woodland or something like that there, you know.
So if people want to go online with the webinar, if you go to the Farming for Nature website, and you'll find the links there.
That's right. Yeah, that's it, Chris.
And that was Shawnee Boyle, who's based near Falcarra. Well, that's it for this week's edition of Farming News and Views. As always, thanks for listening. Until next week, from me, Chris Ashmore, goodbye.
Are you a farmer looking to grow your business? Get up to €75,000 with Cultivate, our competitive, unsecured agricultural loan. Visit us today at Inishowen, Ballybuffet and Stranorler, or Lifford Credit Union. Sponsors of today's farming show. Credit unions of Ireland are regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.